This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. It's time for another episode of The Week in Iceland, and I want to bring in someone that I first spoke to, we think, back in 2005. It's the new old editor of Grapevine magazine, which is, I think, the biggest English language publication in Iceland. Welcome to Bart Cameron. Welcome back to Bart Cameron.
Thank you, Darren.
Back in the editor's chair once again. I also want to bring in at this point the publisher.
That's correct, yeah.
Yes, Jón Trausti Sigfússon, who has been with Grapevine since the start.
I was there at the start, and then I wasn't there for at least a decade, if not
Your
more.
Lost decade.
Yeah. My lost decade in 7 years in Sweden plus something else.
Well, welcome to both of you. Bart, I want to talk to you about your, as I say, your new old role, because you were running the magazine back in the 2000s. You have returned from the USA to Iceland to take
correct,
over
yeah.
this role once again. What was the attraction of coming back?
The biggest attraction is I have three kids, and they were not learning Icelandic. We were losing touch with our Icelandic identity. We came out every summer for a month, and we took care of my mother-in-law and tried to make family connections, but they were falling apart. And my son just turned 13, and I realized, again, you could not homeschool Icelandic in the way I wanted to. So I knew we had to get out. Now is the last chance for a 13-year-old to learn the language and the connection.
Yeah. And had you missed Iceland? You were back in the States, presumably.
Yeah, I was. We were in Seattle. Had I missed Iceland, I have a strong connection with Iceland, and I just enjoy, I feel more free and more relaxed when I'm in Iceland. I would say absolutely. I personally missed living in Iceland. The cost of living is pretty different and shocking. So there are a lot of things that make America easier in certain regards, and you feel wealthy even when you're not in America. I prefer the honesty of life in Iceland. As we were talking before we started, my father was in Scotland too, so it's a proximity to...
You're halfway there.
It's a very short flight, 2 hours to Glasgow, so I could see my father when I was here, whereas getting to Scotland from the United States is very difficult.
Yeah, I've done the flight in 1 hour 45. I say I've done the flight. I wasn't flying the plane myself, but you get the idea.
1:45, really?
1 hour 45, yeah. Wow. I think the wind was behind us.
Must have been.
It must have been. Jón Trausti, Iceland, has it missed Bart, would you say?
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you.
I missed him. I think what Bart brought to the Grapevine back in 2005, which was a background in journalism, which most of us didn't really have. Our background was finishing college or something. We were 20-something. And sort of a nose for good stories, enough distance on the society here to kind of pick out what was interesting. Made the Grapevine, I think, a very large part of both the cultural and the political landscape of Iceland in the mid-noughties, and I think he's bringing some of that energy and skill back.
Yeah. Because what I really like about Grapevine is that it does lots of things. It is certainly a useful guide for tourists and visitors who are in the country who speak English, but that's absolutely not all that it does at all. I think one of the reasons that it has been such a popular magazine over the years is that Icelanders who understand English, which is almost all of them, have bought into that sort of political, opinionated vibe that the magazine's always had. Is that something that you recognize and something that you want to continue with?
1,000%, yeah. We believe in journalism, not PR. So we have to state things that have been internalized by humans and processed and then given context. What the angle we used early on was music and culture. That way, when we gave our opinions on it, the readers could see for themselves or hear for themselves and then see if somebody was telling the truth. And what they valued, in my experience, what our readers valued so early on was that somebody was telling the truth. And it's not exactly truth to power. It's just truth about existence. And back then, there was not any framing. And if you're not giving positive or negative reviews about culture, or positive perceptions, negative perceptions, the culture just loses its value to locals. I remember, and this is kind of shocking, I guess, but there was a band called Holtora, mm-hmm. Like a heavy metal band, party band.
Yeah, whose singer works here, by the way.
That's an accident. I did not mean to do that. I'm so sorry.
Don't sorry worry, that happens
Roof.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah, with whom I interacted with pretty constantly, because, you know, as an editor of a magazine, you have to go out and experience the nightlife. And I'm also a musician, and I loved being around them, and then asked for their CD and reviewed it scathingly, right?
Okay.
Because I said, you know, you're going to be, once you release art, you're in the world with other people, and this won't work. I had hoped that they would continue working and use that as a building block, but I was thanked many times for writing a negative review of Holtora by young Icelanders who said, you know, they're not there yet. They pretend they're gods, and they're not there yet. Yeah. And that kind of thing. Like, we had a lot of difficulty culturally with first drafts being considered final drafts, and without anybody to interact with, that, how do you avoid that? Mm. The culture allowed us to go on to do the same thing with news.
So you're still being reminded of that review. We'll take you out the back door. I wouldn't worry. Under a blanket or something. It'll be fine.
No, I stand by all. I stand by all the reviews.
Yeah.
Once you put something out into the world, yeah, you need to be prepared for the reception.
And the distribution of this magazine is incredible. It seems to be everywhere in print form, which is it's no small thing in 2025, is it?
I guess not. I mean, it's based on what we came up with back in 2003 when we started. And I guess there's a funny anecdote here, which is we did the first issue in June 2003. And I remember looking at the pile of magazines going like, wait, what do we do with this?
Oh God!
And there was no service, and there's hardly any service for this, so we've had to do it ourselves. So there's like a system to it. It's quite both deliberate and well planned, but it's our own system because it's not a service you can buy.
Really?
Yeah.
So you look after, you literally do the distribution.
We literally do the distribution. The magazine does it. Yeah.
But there's like tens of thousands of copies, isn't it?
Yeah, we drove over here in the distribution truck, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's a piece of...
It's a fine French piece of engineering.
Yeah.
So it's you turning up at the swimming pool in Arbar or whatever with 50 copies of paper.
I tend to go every now and then to kind of make sure everything is the way it should be. We usually have, like, people who have been with us for a long time doing it. Yeah. It used to, like... It would be, like... Back in the day, it would be, like late teenagers from Vesterbær who all went to art school eventually. The guy who does the bulk of our distribution now is a sculptor. Great guy.
Yeah.
It's kind of stayed that way.
But I suppose the big difference between then and now is, of course, the internet, obviously. In 2025, Grapevine can be enjoyed anywhere in the world. And much like Roof English Radio, a big part of the audience is outside of Iceland. Are you getting response and finding people getting in touch from other parts of the world that maybe wasn't the case in 2005?
It seems like it was always the case, right?
Yeah.
I feel so. Like the emails we get, the social media stuff, there's always been, people have always been reaching out. But I guess it has kind of expanded in the way that it would have been back in the day, people who were here and then gotten back to wherever they were from.
Yes.
Whereas that's not a necessity anymore. You can read it online.
Yeah, I would say 2 points. We're accessible and human. So when we had the first issues in 2004, 2005, and people would see an email, they would think of themselves as able to reach out to us in maybe a way you wouldn't reach out to the New York Times, right?
Yeah.
So we would get very friendly emails very quickly, and I try to respond to everything. So that did feel like a strong community, but it wasn't people finding us through SEO, which we still really don't follow SEO, search engine optimization guidelines or practices. So you still kind of have to look for us, I would say, compared to other more conventional news outlets.
Well, if anyone's listening to this and they're aware of Roof English Radio but not Grapevine, I think that's probably quite a small Venn diagram, but you can find Grapevine at grapevine.is, grapevine.is, wherever you are in the world. And a very exciting issue coming up at the end of this week. It's going to be published on Friday, available on the streets on Friday if the distribution van is working. We'll talk about that at the end of this episode because it really is a great episode, a great edition of Grapevine coming up. But let us turn to the week in Iceland and the news of the last few days. And we'll just roam around some of the stories that are significant today. As we have our conversation, it's about 20 past two on Monday afternoon. Earlier today, Davi Már Kristofferson, who's the Minister of Finance, presented next year's budget. He's aiming to reduce the deficit to a mere 15 billion kroner. Lots of money in my pocket, lots of money in yours as well, I suspect, but smaller than it currently is.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a lot in the big pocket of the Icelandic government or the state, small as that is, though. It's significantly less than they were originally planning, but I think I assume it has something to do with the fact that they managed to pay off some debts post the bank sale last year.
Yes.
So it's kind of happening, well, should we say seamlessly or easily in a way? They have obviously been on the news a lot this weekend, the foreign minister, the prime minister, and the finance minister now, because parliament is restarting on Wednesday.
Yes.
So that's been a big thing.
And Bart, read his lips, no new taxes.
I think that's, from what I've taken away from the prime minister's interview, I think she'll be fiscally, shockingly for a social democrat, fiscally conservative. I think she knows what's at stake here.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that interview at the end of our conversation, because you have indeed spoken to the Prime Minister, and doubtless this would have come up as well, the plan to reduce that deficit. 15 billion kroner is the plan and a balanced budget by 2027, which is ambitious.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, with our cyclical booms and bursts, it's then, I guess, if they've managed to get rid of the deficits, it's time for another bust, I guess. That's usually how it goes. That's how it went last time. Just in time for the next bust. No, that's, I think that's entirely reasonable, actually. And they seem to kind of, I don't know, they, well, the Minister of Finance is actually educated for the job, which is unusual for Iceland. It's usually been veterinarians, I think. So that's something. So maybe they'll have a, maybe they'll be successful at it. I hope so.
Yeah, I don't think this comment was made lightly. I do think that it will be balanced.
Yeah.
I just think there's going to be some cutting that's going to, I think she assumes her base will tolerate the cutting, and we'll just see how that works out.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, we know there are a lot of things that would benefit from a little more money from the government at this point, healthcare, schools, etc.
What do we make of the story of the Icelandic language professor, whose job is to literally teach other people Icelandic, being told that he can't become a citizen until he takes a test in Icelandic?
With a two-week window in which
there's
in which
no test,
there's no
in,
test
indeed
available.
So he's not on this round going to be able to do it.
Well, it's a very good case in point of computer says no, I think. The guy obviously speaks better Icelandic than most of us native speakers, it seems. Hasn't he been teaching students how to read old Icelandic manuscripts on top of that?
Hmm.
So he's very skilled. It's unfortunate, and I think perhaps a case of the Directorate of Immigration taking their checklist a little too literally, given the result.
Yeah, I'm grateful that he's teaching what he's teaching. I'm grateful for the Icelandic language, and
yeah.
I think you need people from outside of the country helping to teach the language. I'm slowly recovering to coming back to the language, so I could use all the help I can get. And an Italian scholar sounds fantastic to me. I understand the frustration over not getting Icelandic citizenship in this window. I feel like the feedback to that article has been positive in his favor, and I hope he knows that he's celebrated in this community, and that's all I can do as a everyday person. I mean, I know I'm an editor of a magazine, but is to try to reach out and say, we still need you and we want you here, and we'll build something together.
I think that there's no question that next time round he's going to get it, even if he has to take the test. And obviously the test is not going to prove any kind of difficulty to him.
Right.
But some people have said, well, these are the rules, and you know, if he was going to become a citizen, he might have been aware of that rule and just gone and done the test as soon as possible in order to comply with the regulations so the computer could not say no. I don't think anyone is really saying that he can't speak Icelandic.
Right. Right. I'm from such a working class background. I'm so afraid of rules that he's clearly a profoundly intelligent man. I don't see the game the same way other people do. So I always kind of go by the rules. But all I know is I want him here. Please don't leave. Don't get upset about this. Just hang out. We'll try to make it right.
Yeah, I guess since I'm Icelandic, I just don't take rules seriously. So I find this to be kind of and as a lawyer, you know, I understand that, you know, these things have to be, the checklist has to be fulfilled. And I don't know, I don't want to be the guy that says, like, maybe he's just, you know, using this as a way of giving the Director of Immigration a bad rap. I don't think that's true. Yeah. He just, you know, probably didn't do it, didn't turn this in and thought he might, just didn't need to because he was prolific. On the other hand, the pictures of him rounding up sheep looked delightful online, if you saw them.
I did.
And that's the sweater was great.
Yeah, that's true.
So I hope he stays. I hope it's. I hope it doesn't inhibit him in becoming a part of Iceland.
It's going to slow him down a little bit.
A wee bit, but
he's going to be okay.
He's going to be fine.
And just on that point about Icelanders not obeying the rules, I'm simultaneously British and Icelandic. I'm a dual citizen. So I guess I'm at the same time always queuing and jumping the queue simultaneously to reflect both parts of my character, I guess.
Oh, God. I'm so Icelandic, I can't stand even the sight of a queue.
Whereas we just join them for the fun of it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we talked about the importance of culture and music to Grapevine through what is now the decades. And there are two big musical cultural moments that we want to talk about. One is the return of the band Múm, who I've known for as long as I've been interested in Iceland, and probably about as long as the Grapevine has been in existence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful electronica, if you're going to pick one word, but there are so many we could use to describe their music. They have returned. They're back.
Yeah, yeah. They were our cover story for the last issue, and I'm just so grateful for them taking the time with us and for this new work. We always say, like, what genre can you use from Múm? I think the level of their training is often lost on critics. They're clearly multidisciplinary masters, and what they're doing is conveying emotions through masterful composition. And I think they've done that even more so with this newest release. We're going to try to do everything we can to platform these kind of people, these musicians that the struggle that, like, Örvar has gone through over the 25 years. I've known him. I mentioned in my editorial that I knew him because he lived in my gamesla. He lived in the basement of my building. My neighbor ended up becoming a famous musician, but he wasn't at the time. His name was Svava Pieter. And Örvar lived in the gamesla, and Örvar is a very large man, by the way. Obviously, I am a small man. And he approached me one day and said, you need to start talking to your neighbors. And then the next thing you know, we all became friends. And I just remember, though, the exhaustion he had on the day-to-day life, because he was flying out to Paris doing these elaborate Múm presentations. And a Múm concert is more than the music. It's
I've never seen them live.
Oh, my dear. Yeah, it's fantastic. They kind of, but as an artist myself, we always talked about, like, opening the veins. Like, how open do you want to be emotionally as you present something? And I feel like they are fully open to the crowd and to the music as they perform in a way that would take me personally 3 months to recover from a concert like that. Because you're not, I guess I'm a pretty closed off person, but when you open up like that, it's a lot of nerves.
Have you heard the record?
I've heard bits of the record, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I enjoyed it very much. I think it's an excellent record. And it's, and I mean, they've been a part of my life for about a quarter of a century, I guess, since the late 90s. And I'm just glad they're back. I'm glad they're back at recording again, or at least publishing it again. I assume they never stopped recording. Mm. And I know that Well,
they did for a while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they must have been doing something. But Örvar was doing like solo stuff that I actually got to see, which was great.
And lots of the band have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's
spun
been
off into other projects.
Yeah, I mean, there have been numerous people in this band in the past 25 years. Yeah. Hildur Guðnadóttir, I think, is one of them. The now famous composer of movie scores, and the twins who are. Sometimes one of them, sometimes two of them are in the band, have done similar work.
Yes.
I mean, Silla, Sigurlaug Gísladóttir, vocalist, known her for 20 years. She's great. She's been in the band for, what, 20 years now?
15 yeah.
years. And then Örvar and Gunni.
They're almost at finishing school for Icelandic composers. Moom.
Yeah. It's yeah.
And I love that. It's great.
Yeah, and it's also like Bart was saying, it's not like musically... And technically, it's hard stuff. Like it's yeah, it doesn't you know,
can't tell what they're doing.
No,
you think it's you think they're just breathing through the instruments, right?
Yeah,
but it's not that. It's
complicated stuff.
10 years of composition theory into those notes.
Well, some music really does reward repeated listening, and some music's not even possible to access until you've heard it a few times. Yeah. I think they fall. Into that, but at the same time, there are some beautiful melodies that catch you straight away.
Oh, yeah,
exactly. I think you can hear, yeah, you get them right away, and then you don't understand why it worked. And for me, yeah, especially having a lot of conversations with Örvar, it's finding out the how complicated each choice is astonishing.
No, they, I mean, absolutely. Some of the singles for this new album are basically, I wouldn't call them easy listening. But you get it right away, and then you can continue listening and you know getting into all the back details you didn't hear the first time around. But they will sometimes provide you with something that's accessible, and that's also fine.
Well, Moom, take us back at least 25 years. Let's go back two decades. Let's go back 20 years to the release of the Tak album by Sia Ross. Anniversary of that coming up. We know Sia Ross are very keen to repackage and republish their work in various deluxe editions, but this was a landmark album for them because it had the hit single on it.
It was a landmark album for us too because they were so grateful to allow me to come see them record it. And
was that at the Swimming Pool Studio?
It was
in
indeed. Yeah. And we were just starting out as a magazine, and they'd let this random American wander around their studio as they were composing. And I was so grateful for that opportunity. And then when they had the album ready, they gave us it early. And we did this thing where we just discussed each track by track and tried to explain what they were doing and why it was working or if it was working. In our magazine, before, you know, this is before the internet was fully at the level it is now. So we had a month to break down the album before it got released anywhere else. That was a huge gesture on their part, and they also did... obviously a 2-hour interview with us that we dedicated our cover to. But the next thing you know, a little magazine in Reykjavik is covered by I'm Midwestern, so Pitchfork picking up our story immediately and saying, it looks like Sigur Rós has a good album. And I was like, yeah, it's a fantastic album. This is they've done it. All the pressure was on them and they kicked it through.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful.
And talking of music hitting you instantly or not, Hupapula is on that record, which was given the title of the money song originally, I think, because they knew it was going to make them money. It was picked up by David Attenborough's team and became the theme to the Planet Earth documentaries in the UK and all of that. Was it obvious to you, Jon, when you heard that song in particular, that this was going to be something that launched them into a new level?
Oh, God. I think, honestly, I can't remember.
A lot of hesitancy among the Icelandic community to the album.
And really?
They weren't quite integrated at that point. They had been, and this happens a lot. In fact, we've been talking about a lot at The Office because of Monsters and Men had a single that I was listening to, and I thought, well, this is an amazing turn of pace for a successful band. Ordinary People, Ordinary Creature is the name of one of their recent singles, and it's such a change of pace for them. A bold step and an excellently crafted single. And if you talk to an Icelandic musician, there's a lot of hesitancy for a world famous Icelandic band who made it outside of Iceland. And Sigur Rós was in that boat with Tak. They were not local. They were not viewed as local. They were playing everywhere but here. Before they came back for Heim and for those concerts, I remember them being mocked on on Roof, on TV, that people would imitate them, their Hoplandic and the way they were presenting themselves. They had to earn the hard way the respect in Iceland, but they weren't receiving it at Talk. Because I remember kind of shock when we decided that we were going to put them on the cover. Wouldn't you do a cooler band? And
really?
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have thought that at any point in that band's history, putting them in the cover of the Reykjavik Grapevine would have been controversial or strange or in
any
way.
We're so close to the ground. We're usually with bands that that do not leave Iceland.
Yeah.
Those are the people that are in the office every day. I mean, our distribution team is often people who are hanging out with people in the studio, and we were hanging out with people in the studio all the time. And
But going back to that time, did people in Iceland, if you remember, did they feel that Sigur Rós was selling out by having success, by getting on a plane? And
I don't think it's quite selling out. They just feel they're not a part of you.
Really?
Because so many people interact on a constant basis with the other musicians.
Yeah, it's just a matter of like, it's a physical proximity. They wouldn't be like playing, you know, Grand Rock or whatever, the other, whatever bar it was that everybody was playing. You know, they would be touring elsewhere and weren't really like hanging out there and then all of the time.
And has Iceland reclaimed them, or have they reclaimed Iceland now, would you say?
To some extent, I guess. I mean, the whole Heima... was it 2006?
This was the Back to the Roots tour where they traveled around and made live recordings in various remote parts of the country.
Yeah, and just made themselves a lot more available locally, I think, again. I mean, they are from a scene, the 90s scene, of which I know a lot of like musicians from that scene, and they were obviously a part, but they had been kind of out of the country, out of your immediate circle for a while, doing their thing. So I guess that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and it can be a bit complicated. Even now, they don't live here.
Not all of them, no.
Yeah, so Yonzi's in Los Angeles.
I think the rest of them are here, though, probably.
So you've covered Moom on the current issue of Grapevine. Has there been coverage yet of the 20th anniversary of Tak, or is that coming?
I have a long, complicated story, but mainly we're going to have to be referred to our old coverage because as grateful as they are for us reaching out, they're in a current, Sigur Rós is currently in a logistical nightmare of starting their tour and releasing an album. And so they haven't been able to work with us the way they used to. So we probably can't even, I don't even know if we'll get to cover the new unreleased tracks on this next, because we wanted to do everything just in time for their release. So we'll have to delay it.
Yeah.
Which doesn't hurt them, right? People will come to see them no matter what, but it's a bit of a different relationship than we used to have. Though I will say they're very friendly in the emails while we're trying to coordinate this.
Well, I really enjoyed their last record, Auta, which, you know, was leaning towards the sort of Valtari side of things, very electronic and very ambient and soundscapes. That's my kind of Sigur Rós rather than the big pounding orchestral. I suppose, like Bowie, everyone's got their favorite type of Sigur Rós, haven't they?
Yeah, it's nice that they have different types. And
yes.
My kids love the How to Train Your Dragon soundtracks. So that's their Sigur Rós.
Oh my God, I don't even want to discuss what my kids are listening to.
Right, let's talk about the new issue then, because we said at the start of our conversation that you are very rightly proud of the issue of Grapevine that's coming out on Friday. You hinted at it there, of course, Bart. You've got an interview with the Prime Minister.
Yeah, well, I should preface this by saying it's not my personal interview. It's
the royal you.
Yeah, we contacted a freelance writer to do the in-depth interview, and that's kind of our direction we're headed, where we work on features with 2 to 3 month lead times. So we prepped that we were going to go for this Prime Minister interview, that we prepped the depth of the interview, and then we prepped that we would take 3 weeks after the interview to shape it into something that could be explained to all of our audiences, meaning the Icelandic audience, the new Icelandic audience, or Icelanders who speak English or are more comfortable in English. I think that was what I was desperate to serve, in the same way you serve so well the new Icelandic audience.
You're very kind. Thank you very much. What did you want to not learn from her, but what did you want to achieve from the interview?
Big part of our current kind of our whiteboard in our office is, you may know that Annie Applebaum, the Atlantic's political correspondent, Atlantic Monthly political correspondent, released Autocracy, Inc., about the shift away from democracy in Western Europe and in the United States. I thought the prime minister might have a perspective on that, and I wanted to be ready for if she addressed that. And it turned out she had the exact same idea, and she feels that, to steal our headline, that democracy is at a precipice, and she's the one. She may be taking too much responsibility, but she feels like she is. It's within her power to not lose Iceland to that way of thinking. So if she can use the Social Democrats to show that government can work, it can't always work to everything you aspire to within your political party, but if you can make it respond to the population at home and keep an engaged population, an engaged voting population, Iceland can become a model again.
Jon, it seems to me that she's in quite a fortunate position at the moment, and indeed the government is, partly because of the way the opposition has, in some people's eyes, behaved recently with the filibuster over the fishing fees and all the rest of it. The opposition is very unpopular just now, and you've got parties that were represented in the last parliament who would not be elected were there to be an election tomorrow, based on current opinion polling. Do you think, as Bart was touching on there, she's in a position to take advantage of that in the way that she's described?
So, I guess one of the questions we had this summer was whether or not there would be more filibusters, right?
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, it was so immensely unpopular that the parties mainly responsible for the filibuster, namely the Independence Party, were losing in each and every opinion poll from, I guess, May onwards. Mm. So they've come on the record to say that they changed the chairman of the parliamentary party for the Independence Party, and they've kind of come on the record saying they're not going to do that. And at the same time, Kristrún Frostadóttir's party has been surging in the polls, and it's kind of interesting because we haven't really seen that for 20 years at least, where the incoming coalition in this case is actually, not all of the parties, but two of them are doing better than they did during the election. That's unusual. So whether or not she can work in that, I mean, it's a favorable situation for her. At the same time, it was definitely something she probably was worried about, whether or not Parliament would function in its sort of intended way this winter. But as far as I can tell right now, it probably will. And therefore, hopefully more of the policy ideas that this coalition has will actually pass through Alþingi this winter. There's a lot of backlog of stuff that they haven't been able to do that they were planning to do this spring, which are unfortunate.
A media bill would be nice.
A media bill would be nice. There is none at the moment, which is problematic for probably all independent media. But there's also a lot of other stuff that has just been left in the, which is left behind in the filibuster.
I don't want to unwrap too much of this because we want to read it on Friday, of course, right. And I'm sure everybody will. But did she touch on something that's going to be significant in 2027 or by 2027, which is the referendum on whether to resume or restart, depending on your perspective, negotiations with the European Union?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have a long section on the discussion with the EU. But I don't see... Our writer had an excellent way of framing it. Will she jump on board and put her reputation on the line with a referendum, or will she play referee and say, either way this goes, it's democracy in action? I get a feeling that she's going to do the latter. Mm. I get a feeling she's a pragmatist, and that I'm sorry if people are pro-EU. I don't think that's her priority. I think her priority is...
It is her coalition partner's priority, who are second in the government.
Absolutely. So that was a big shock in the interview. Yeah. And then, so I've just ruined my piece, I guess, ruined my feature. My impression from the quotes and from talking to Elias, who did the interview, is that it's not her priority. Her priority is keeping the government going. And EU can just be such a stumbling block.
I suppose the question is, does she want to just let it happen, or does she want to actively oppose? Does she want to get in the way of this thing, or is she quite happy for her partners?
Oh, I don't think she would ever get in the way of it. No.
But I think she's not gonna put her own political career on the line for it either.
Right. That's my theory.
Yeah.
Well, once again, the British side of my character can absolutely confirm that referendums on European membership are entirely uncontroversial and boring, so there'll be nothing to report there for the next couple of
years. You didn't cite my last name in the interview, so...
Oh, yeah, Mr. Cameron.
No relation.
No relation.
You're not taking the blame for all the Camerons in the world.
No.
In that case. Guys, it's been a blast. Thank you very much indeed. Looking forward to reading that magazine. It'll be available online, of course, and wherever you distribute it, I guess.
All over the island.
Because we should say you are the Reykjavik Grapevine, but of course the magazine's available and covers issues outside of the capital.
Oh, yeah, of course. We have to expand our coverage outside of this only city in Iceland, I think, fairly.
Well, especially we always have a lot of readers, especially in the Westfjords, that help us out, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good thing. Thank you for bringing us on.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure, and apologies to anyone listening in Akureyri who thinks that we're not a city.
Well, Akureyri is where you can do curling, the only place you can curl in Iceland, so I'll be out there more frequently.
Is it the only place?
I didn't know that. Yeah, they have the stones.
They also have the better skiing.
Oh yeah, so we will probably be out there more frequently in the future.
And actually, if you enjoy like sports and outdoors, Akureyri is actually a better city.
It's a wonderful place. Yeah. It's one of my favorite places in the country.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So no shade on Akureyri.
Bart Cameron, editor of the Reykjavik Grapevine, and Jón Trausti Sigurðsson, who's the publisher. Thank you both very much indeed. We shall talk again, I've no doubt.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
This is Ruv English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch with us anytime. English@ruv.is.
There is more from RÚV English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RÚV English Radio is daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.